Okay, verse 6. Therefore, the peacock-like heroes must transform into elixir, the afflictions that resemble the jungle of poison. In this way, they must enter the jungle of cyclic existence and embrace the afflictions and destroy their poison. Okay, so most beings, most of us, when we get some sense of what cyclic existence is about, when we really understand the suffering of samsara, we want out. You know, get me out of here ASAP. And that's the motivation of beings that we call hearers and solitary realizers. In other words, they have that total renunciation of the suffering of cyclic existence and its causes, and they want their own liberation. Okay? So it's a great motivation. It's limited in that it's for oneself alone. It wants out of samsara completely. Bodhisattvas, okay, they want out of samsara in the sense, samsara or cyclic existence, in the sense not simply because they're suffering, but because they want to be able to benefit other living beings in the most effective way, and to do that they want to attain the full enlightenment of Buddhahood. And so for that reason, in order to benefit others, they want to get out of cyclic existence. Now there's a common misperception that some people think that bodhisattvas stay in cyclic existence. Okay, they give up their Buddhahood and stay in cyclic existence. That's not exactly accurate. They want to give up their cyclic existence, but they're willing to stay in the world to benefit those of us who are still in cyclic existence. Okay? And their courage and their compassion is so great that if it would be more beneficial for them to stay in the horrors of cyclic existence rather than attain, you know, enlightenment, they're willing to do that because their compassion is so strong. But they also see that if they can attain enlightenment, then they'll have the full capabilities to be of the best benefit to all living beings. So they're still aiming for enlightenment, and they attain enlightenment. Yeah. And when they get to a certain level on the bodhisattva path, and also when they're Buddha, then they're able to manifest many, many bodies within cyclic existence for the benefit of the rest of us, you know. And so they appear in many different forms to guide us and lead us on the path. Okay, so, you know, in that way they're willing to stay in the world, or they're willing to stay in cyclic existence, but not their own cyclic existence. Because remember, cyclic existence means one's own contaminated body and mind. Okay, but they would stay in the world. They don't just stay in their own blissful nirvana. Okay, but they don't suffer in the way we do, because their mind has been purified, and so that gives them the capability to be tremendously beneficial. When bodhisattvas manifest in our lives, they don't identify themselves. Okay, they'd come out, you know, with little name tags. Hi, I'm Bodhisattva Chenrezig. Hi, I'm Bodhisattva Manjushri. You know, but because the whole idea is that they appear in whatever way is most efficacious for leading beings on the path. Okay, so they often appear as ordinary beings, because that's the way to communicate with us most effectively. So verse 7, from now on, divorce from well-being, this helpless wanderer, this self-grasping who is the emissary of demons, which seeks its own selfish happiness and prosperity, joyfully embrace hardships for the sake of others. Okay, so calling oneself a helpless wanderer, you know, because we're helplessly wandering in cyclic existence, Yeah. What's making us wander? Our self-grasping, you know, self-grasping ignorance and self-centered thought. So the self-grasping is the it heralds the demon. Okay, the demon is the self-centered thought. Okay, so you have self-grasping, which is the concept of, or the grasping at oneself, all other persons, all phenomena as truly existent. You know, that reifying of everything, thinking everything has its own independent nature, existing from its own side. And through that, then, you know, if there's this big, strong I, me, okay, then, of course, I'm the most important one in the world. And that's the self-centeredness, okay? So self-grasping or ignorance is the concretization of everything, yeah? Making, perceiving everything as truly existent. The self-centeredness is the thought that, based on that self-grasping of I, of the person, says, I'm the most important one. Okay? So, my suffering hurts more than anybody else's. Happiness is more important than anybody else's. My Dharma practice is more important than anybody else's. Yeah? What I realize today is more important than what anybody else realized today. What the pain in my knees is, you know, more significant than the pain in everybody else's knees. You know, just everything relating to me, I, my, and mine. That's self-centeredness or self-preoccupation. Sometimes it's translated as self-cherishing, but I think that translation can be misleading, because then when people hear you're supposed to, you know, it's good to abandon self-cherishing, they say, oh, well, then I'm supposed to hate myself. Well, no, that's not abandoning self-centeredness. Okay? Yeah. We need to cherish ourselves, but cherish ourselves properly. How do we cherish ourselves properly? By wanting ourselves to get out of cyclic existence. Okay? By wanting ourselves to develop bodhicitta. That's how we properly take care of ourselves. So we need to cherish ourselves in the proper way and respect ourselves in the proper way. Okay? But what we often do is we cherish ourselves in an improper way that creates more suffering, because it's, instead of actually cherishing ourselves, it's indulging our self-centeredness. And that's why I think self-centeredness is a better translation than self-cherishing.